From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and this is your Sunday Spin, our weekly look into the world of politics. Well, it's been quite a week, and we've got a lot to talk about. So grab a cup of coffee and the Sunday paper, and we'll get this week off and running as we begin to enter the month of July and hopefully some full-fledged summer. I was out on the WGN Storm Center patio. It's a gorgeous morning here in downtown Chicago. But I'm also keeping an eye on the radar, which looks like storms are right on the Iowa-Illinois border. So that does not portend a great later today. I hope this does not get in the way of my grilling today, Schwani.
I hate to say this.
Yeah.
What time were you planning on firing up that grill?
What time do you suggest I fire up the grill?
The earlier the better.
Yeah, really.
Well, with the forecast actually says specifically the showers and thunderstorms could be here later this afternoon, 4 o'clock on after 5. And we're going to see them into the evening and overnight into tomorrow, too. So, once again, same old story with the rain.
You know, I really am sick of the rain.
Everybody is. It's
now, you know, someone did suggest, though, that the rain has kept the temperatures down so that everybody's air conditioning bills are.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Yeah.
I don't care. I'm sorry. I just want full-fledged
you
summer.
Know, you know, it was I think it was either this past Friday or one day last week, it was chilly enough in my place that I actually had the heat on for a little while.
Really?
I hate to say that, but it's how about it?
Today was the first day I came into the studio and didn't bring a jacket with me. I was kind of projecting confidence here, you know. And actually, yeah, I'm cold. I should have brought my jacket.
We've got an extra jacket here. You can.
I can borrow that.
Feel free to. Yes, you mentioned the rain and everything else. Flooding is a problem around many places around Illinois and the Midwest. Saw a note today that the city of Peru, Illinois, on the Illinois River, is canceling its Independence Day fireworks. This is the second year in a row because of flooding on the Illinois River there. So no Independence Day fireworks this coming weekend in Peru, Illinois.
Wow. That's you got to imagine the ground is just completely saturated.
Saturated. Oh, yeah.
And
well, that's one of the reasons why they moved the Blackhawks celebration.
Right.
They didn't want, you know, the Grant Park was muddy enough and wet enough. We all know what happens after Lollapalooza when it rains.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
Yes,
so,
indeed.
So that's one of the big reasons why they moved it to Soldier Field.
Well, and it turned out to be a great day, but it's totally understandable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just and you still, you know, here even in the downtown areas, you see kind of like these standing pools of water. And my thought is, what does this mean about mosquitoes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that those kind of pools of water, that's and
that's
yeah,
that's the state insect in Alaska, by the way.
Minnesota, too.
And Minnesota.
Yes, yeah. Minnesota. But state bird, actually, in Minnesota is, I think, how they refer to it. You know, already I'm hearing the forecast for, now it's a week in advance, but I was up at the WGN TV studios at the end of last week, filling in for Paul Lisnick on Politics Tonight, the great political show on CLTV. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Skilling did not have very nice things to say about the potential of glorious sunshine for the 4th of July.
Yeah, let's see.
I mean, I know that's long range.
Friday, but we've got yet again a chance of showers and thunderstorms, but partly sunny, high of near 72. But you know what, Rick? We're looking Wednesday evening, we could see lows in the 50s.
Really?
Yes.
And that's July 1.
Yeah, that's July 1.
July 1, Wednesday. Ugh. Man, I, and I truly, I mean, I hate hot, muggy, humid weather, especially if I have to be somewhere in a coat and tie. There is nothing worse.
Well, sure, yeah.
But I would just like one day to be
of some
able
warmth,
to,
some real
to
warmth.
Sit outside and just kind of feel that radiant heat and the mugginess and all that summer's supposed to be like.
Exactly, and, right. I no longer complain about hot weather.
Well, and well, no, but. And that's
right,
the
Dolly?
Way. It, is that the way it is, though?
You know? I never hear you complain, Schwani.
Oh, you haven't been around me long.
I was just going to say you ought to spend more time in the newsroom. That's how we start our Sundays. You know, we kind of have our guy session. You know, it's kind of the get off my lawn session. I think is what it is. But well, and I'm kind of looking forward to the 4th of July holiday because, believe it or not, I'm not going to be here next
This will
Sunday.
Be the first time
no.
in the history of this program.
Correct. Correct.
That you will not be here.
In nearly 2 years. My good friend Amanda Vinicky from Illinois Public Radio will be here in studio filling in, and I know she'll do a wonderful job. But, yeah, I'm, like, doing a full-on grilling on 4th of July and going to, you know, do some ribs, going to do some pulled pork. The famed blue cheese bacon coleslaw. I'm going to bring
that
out.
Oh, I'll be there for that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one.
Oh, you haven't?
Oh, I'll take some leftovers.
Oh, it's all we talked about.
We'll swing by
summer.
Sunday morning and pick up.
That coleslaw was all we talked about last
Which
year.
Which goes perfect on top of the pulled pork with the 17th Street barbecue sauce from down in Murfreesboro, Illinois. Some of the best sauce in the world.
Isn't there a great barbecue place down there? In
17th Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the place. Yeah. And it's some of the best sauce for pulled pork because it's, you know, it's not thick. It goes right into the meat and it's terrific. And I'll have the pulled pork on the smoker for about 6 hours. And,
well, I think in light of the fact that you will be celebrating our nation's birthday.
And mine.
And your birthday. Yes. Well, better yet.
Yes. Are you on the 4th, Rick?
I'm the 3rd, actually. Okay. My mom still would always complain about missing the fireworks.
We need to put this event on the WGN website with the Sunday Spin link that we have for next week.
Put what event?
Your 4th of July barbecue event on. Recipes,
yeah,
right along with
I'm sure your
with
listeners
the audio links to Amanda's program for next week.
Well, I think Jasmine can work that
Jasmine
out.
Jasmine can do it.
Yes, yes. I know she knows where the blue cheese and bacon coleslaw recipe is. I think that's the biggest hit we've ever gotten on our social media is that recipe. So, but we will bring that back up and. That's a great idea, Dave, actually. And we're going to.
I'm good for something, you know?
No.
Do some short YouTube video clips, Rick.
Oh,
we want to see you in action.
No, yes. No.
Get out the GoPro.
Yeah, right.
Come on.
We'll see. Okay, we'll see about that. But no, truly, I'm going to miss you guys next weekend, but I'm actually looking forward to just a little bit of time because. This is going to be a very long, hot summer when it comes to politics and the never-ending stalemate in Springfield and those kinds of things.
Yeah, how about it? Last month, we were all joking that Springfield is a nice place to be for politicians on the 4th of July. They're going to be there.
Well, yeah. I frankly, you know, they all march in those 4th of July parades when back home and things. Mm-hmm. And I'll be very curious to see what kind of reception they get as this stalemate kind of prolongs. So we'll be talking about that coming up. We've got a great show today. After the 7:30 news, my Tribune colleague Juan Perez Jr. will join the show to talk about the myriad of issues facing the Chicago Public Schools, an unpayable pension payment that's due on Tuesday, breakdown in negotiations with the Chicago Teachers Union, and the offer of help from the governor that has some strings attached for unions, and that's all part of the budget stalemate in Springfield. That's after 7:30. After Dave brings us the 8 o'clock news, Suzanne Strasburger will be joining the show, and Suzanne is policy chair and co-founder of Illinois Partners for Human Services, and that's a coalition of over 900 groups, all of which are caught up in that Springfield budget stalemate. And then after the 8:30 news, we'll catch up with Republican State Senator Dale Reiter of Mattoon. And I wanted the senator to come on the show to kind of give us a downstate perspective on the budget battle in Springfield. That's all coming up. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take our weekly spin through national politics and what a week it was. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We just turned past 7:21 on this Sunday morning. Beautiful Sunday morning. Get out and enjoy it before the rains start moving in. Yes, more rain on the schedule. Well, of course, today is the Pride Parade that's going on, and Dolly will keep us up to alert about road closures on the north side, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty of celebrating going on. I just really can't remember a week like what we've had with historic Supreme Court rulings on Obamacare and same-sex marriage, a change in conscience over the symbols of the Confederacy. We had a president in the throes of lame duckness seeming to find a new stride and ensuring his legacy. And truly, I think the story of last week was President Obama. And I want to start with his remarks on race, which were came Friday at the eulogy for Reverend Pinckney and eight others who were gunned down in their church in Charleston, South Carolina. Here's the president talking about how he believes America's eyes have been opened to the meaning and the symbolism behind the Confederate flag.
For too long, we were blind to the pain that the Confederate flag stirred in too many of our citizens. It's true, a flag did not cause these murders. But as people from all walks of life, Republicans and Democrats, now acknowledge, including Governor Haley, whose recent eloquence on the subject is worthy of praise. As we all have to acknowledge, the flag has always represented more than just ancestral pride. For many, black and white, that flag was a reminder of systemic oppression and racial subjugation. We see that now. Removing the flag from this state's capital would not be an act of political correctness. It would not be an insult to the valor of Confederate soldiers. It would simply be an acknowledgement that the cause for which they fought, the cause of slavery, was wrong.
That's the president. Speaking of removing the Confederate flag, it was temporarily removed from the front of the South Carolina State House on Saturday when an activist climbed the flagpole and, despite calls by police to get down, removed the banner. That woman was arrested, the Confederate flag was restored, and then there was a group of about 50 people who support keeping the flag who held a rally at the State House. Many were waving Confederate flags as they shouted, "Heritage, not hate." Well, there will be much more to that story as the South Carolina General Assembly, they've now granted permission to consider a vote on removing that flag. And we've got state officials throughout the South that are also standing by decisions to remove the flag and the symbol that it stands for. Also on Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a 5-4 landmark decision, ruled that state bans on same-sex marriage are unconstitutional, a historic ruling that forever changed the nation. Here's the president on that.
This decision will end the patchwork system we currently have. It will end the uncertainty hundreds of thousands of same-sex couples face for from not knowing whether their marriage, legitimate in the eyes of one state, will remain if they decide to move or even visit another. This ruling will strengthen all of our communities by offering to all loving same-sex couples the dignity of marriage across this great land.
And, of course, just a day earlier, the Supreme Court, with the help of conservative Chief Justice John Roberts, saves another attempt to kill off the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Here is the president's reaction to the law, part of his legacy being validated.
For all the misinformation campaigns, all the doomsday predictions, all the talk of death panels and job destruction, for all the repeal attempts, this law is now helping tens of millions of Americans.
Now, many leading Republicans aren't happy with the Supreme Court, including several GOP presidential candidates. Here's Texas Senator Ted Cruz speaking on the Senate floor in reaction to the court's ruling on Obamacare.
Today's decision in King versus Burwell is judicial activism, plain and simple. For the second time in just a few years, a handful of unelected judges has rewritten the text of Obamacare in order to impose that failed law upon millions of Americans. The first time, the court ignored federal law and magically transformed a statutory penalty into a tax. Today, these robed Houdinis have transmogrified a federal exchange into an exchange, quote, established by the state.
Now, Cruz has gone even further in remarks in Des Moines last night. Cruz says that he will be sponsoring a constitutional amendment that would require the Supreme Court justices to be subject to a kind of a ratification vote by the public, kind of the way we do retention ballots here in the state of Illinois for the judiciary. Also last week, another week passes. That means another Republican presidential candidate. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, now the 13th candidate, with more to come. Here's Governor Jindal.
Democrats evaluate success in terms of the prosperity of government. We define success in terms of the prosperity of our people. My approach is different from most of the other people running for president. The United States of America was made great by people who get things done, not lots of talk. Oh, to be sure, there are a lot of great talkers running for president already, but none of them, not one, can match our record of actually shrinking the size of government.
That's Governor Bobby Jindal's announcement as another Republican enters the race for president. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Ahead on the Sunday Spin, my Tribune colleague Juan Perez Jr., who covers the Chicago Public Schools for the Tribune, and will be talking about the turmoil that faces the public schools.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin on the last Sunday of June 2015. You know, there is so much going on. There's the Pride Parade and all the activities going on there. It's a beautiful Sunday morning. Take advantage of it before the rain starts moving in. As I said, looking at the radar, it's on the Iowa border. We're gonna get more rain. I'm sorry about it. It seems like a constant repeat of every Sunday morning that we do the show. But seriously, get out this morning and really enjoy the sunshine. Well, joining me now on the Sunday Spin is my Chicago Tribune colleague Juan Perez Jr. And Juan covers the Chicago Public Schools for the Chicago Tribune, does a great job with it. And frankly, Juan, you got your hands full. This is a moment, I think, of unparalleled turmoil for the Chicago public school system. Can you just outline for us everything that is facing the schools, including a very big deadline coming Tuesday?
Let's see if I can actually hit everything.
Do you have enough fingers? Do you have enough fingers to count down these things?
Let's start with this. The fact of the matter is that the school system right now, one of the most, if not the most important enterprise that the city of Chicago provides, that's the public safety, is facing a very serious and by all accounts, very real serious financial, I hesitate to use the word crisis. A lot of people like to use the word crisis, but I mean, it's hard to.
I think it fits in this time. Yeah.
Term. It's hard to imagine what a more appropriate term is. That genuinely, according to a lot of people who not only observe the district but are involved in the operations of the system, could very well threaten to result in major budget cuts. Could potentially delay the opening of school doors on time this fall. And as we said, a pretty serious situation. Part of what's prompted the immediate cash crunch situation, and calling it a cash crunch is certainly accurate, because the district doesn't really have, absent borrowing a lot of money, the district doesn't have a lot of enough cash to cover bills due by the end of the month. And one of those major bills is a more than $600 million payment due for teachers' pensions here that's coming up here just in a matter of just a couple short days. So there's been wrangling at the state level to try and figure out some sort of reprieve or alternative route. And all this, of course, comes as there is a transition in leadership going on at the top levels of the school system itself. Barbara Bird Bennett, the former chief executive officer brought in by Mayor Rahm Emanuel, is no longer with the system amid a federal investigation into some contracts that were approved by the school board and that she helped oversee during her time at the district. So, yeah, like you said, to put it mildly, you know, this massive institution that serves nearly 400,000 children oversees a budget of a multi-billion dollar budget and more than, you know, roughly 600 buildings is at a serious crossroads right now. Not to mention, amid all of this, the city is working on negotiating a new deal with its teachers, and that plays an essential role in all of this. That you know, that it's just part of the same portrait that we're looking at right now. It's all of these factors just coming to a head right here in June 2015.
Well, the thing I found interesting about the negotiations between the public schools, the Board of Education, and the teachers union was, I think it was like the middle of last week, where Karen Lewis sounded somewhat optimistic that the teachers were close to a deal, at least a one-year contract deal. And then literally in less than 24 hours, it was talks have broken off.
It's certainly an abrupt development, and you're right. Karen had suggested that, that we were, quote, literally this close to a deal. She told me we're this close to a deal. And it's true that, my understanding is that contract negotiations had certainly been accelerating and had been making some substantive progress. Those are always very professional dialogues between the two sides there. But then we get word from Karen again herself that while she thought the union was close to a deal, this is what she told us last week. Today we found out that their bargaining rhetoric is as empty as their bank account, to put it in her words.
Yeah.
And so talks at least as of this weekend had broken off and the prospects for getting some kind of a deal done by early next week, which I think was the timeline, at least a goal in some folks' minds. It doesn't look as though it's going to work out that way, though.
Juan, we've got a call from Sally. Sally, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hi, Sally.
Hi, good morning. Does this affect charter schools? And the reason I'm asking is because I'm a charter school employee, but I don't teach, okay? So okay. Are there two separate entities? So if the CTU goes out on strike, hopefully they won't, will that also affect the charter schools not opening?
All right. Thank you, Sally, for your question. Juan?
That's actually a great question. That's a great question. And let me, here's the short answer is that the teacher's contract doesn't cover charter schools because charter teachers aren't members of the Chicago Teachers Union. They kind of operate outside of the Chicago public schools in that regard. However, this budget situation is something that could still affect charter schools. Because of the fact that that charter schools in the city do receive some of their funding from taxpayer dollars from the Chicago Public Schools, campus by campus. And that is a considerable amount of money that charter schools do get from the Chicago Public School System, part of this massive budget that it has. So, I know this isn't a perfect answer, but no, the teacher contract negotiations don't necessarily have a direct effect on charter schools. In fact, they wouldn't, because if in the event that the teachers union was to go on strike, that wouldn't affect the employees that work in charter schools. However, if this budget situation does certainly turn out to be as dire as everyone says it is, then there could be a situation in which charter school funding is affected. And we have to see how all of that works out. I hope that answers at least a little bit of your question.
We're speaking with my Tribune colleague Juan Perez Jr. about the financial turmoil of the Chicago Public Schools. I'm Rick Pearson in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is your Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. And I'm joined on the phone by Juan Perez Jr., my Chicago Tribune colleague, as we talk about the financial dilemma facing the Chicago Public Schools. And, you know, Juan, we've got Tuesday is the deadline for the $634 million pension payment that's due. That is something that would basically just kind of wipe out the cash of the Chicago Public Schools. Mayor Emanuel thought there was some kind of deal with him. Governor Bruce Rauner, Senate President John Cullerton to put that off, put that payment off for at least 40 days to August 10th, trying to buy some time because now it's become kind of interwoven into the Springfield overall state budget stalemate. Then you had the governor the other day make this proposal about basically kind of a money shift would give the Chicago Public Schools some money, but it's a very complicated agreement because it also includes eventually ending block grant funding. It eventually would involve a new general state aid formula, and unfortunately this show doesn't last long enough for me to explain how the state school aid formula works. But that's something that a lot of people have talked about for a long time. It's extremely complicated. It's hard to hold any school district in the state, several school districts in the state, to kind of hold harmless. It's all about winners and losers when it comes to money. And then you throw in another factor of this are some of the union weakening positions that Governor Rauner has made as part of his turnaround agenda. So I don't know where anything is going when the legislature returns on Tuesday. House Speaker Michael Madigan says last week when it was defeated in the House, and there's a wide feeling of belief that and certainly the accusation from Governor Rauner's forces that since Speaker Madigan wasn't part of the original deal for the 40-day delay, that this was Mike Madigan in essence showing his power by having this thing go down for defeat. The Speaker says he's going to call the bill again for another vote on Tuesday. But I don't know if anybody can be certain what to expect when the legislature comes back in on Tuesday.
I'm certainly not. I certainly am not. I mean, boy, I remember, you know, sitting in the office watching the votes come through just last week. You know, I personally kind of believed that wouldn't be much trouble for the school district to get to win that reprieve at the state level, and it turns out that that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it was fast-tracked. Everybody kind of thought, here, you know, this thing is ready to roll, it's going to move, and boom, it got 53 votes.
it should be a done deal. And it turns out it isn't. And, you know, I'd like to point our listeners here this morning, grab your Sunday paper and turn to, I believe it's page 4, where our colleagues Monique Garcia and Kim Geiger have a very informative story about some of the dynamics that are kind of happening here. And, you know, they note that, you know, the mayor, Governor Rauner, and obviously leadership in the legislature have been talking about striking some kind of deal that can win the majorities needed to pass the General Assembly. And so, you know, they note here the agreement, you know, citing a source that is familiar with negotiations, they note that whatever agreement comes up could be a repeat of what we saw last week, or it could involve some new elements. So who knows what that could mean when they come back into session. You know, it's interesting because you note the complications here, and the duo of Garcia and Geiger note just yet another wrinkle, another complication, saying that you know, the governor has made clear that this push to delay the payment, he's made this part of his call for broader changes to the pension system, and as you noted, it's extremely complex formula to fund schools, and even City Hall has sent some mixed signals on this, because initially they said that proposal could cost the city hundreds of millions of dollars over time. Then more details come out Friday, and then you hear City Hall, you know, kind of softening the criticism and expressing some kind of support for the fact that coming up with a new formula, there could be a framework here to finding a long-term solution to helping the Chicago public school system out. And a long-term solution is certainly going to be necessary here for the school system to get it figured out here. I mean, there's been this, the school system commissioned a report from the Ernst & Young firm, which has been certainly making the rounds here in recent days. And the consultants made very clear that in their perspective, any kind of long-term plan for the city students is going to require the school district, the city, and the state to be working together to some degree, because the we talk about liquidity shortfalls. We talk about a cash crunch. We talk about not having the money in your checking account to pay the bill that you have due at the end of the month. And it's entirely possible that, while the immediate and medium-term liquidity shortfalls are extremely concerning, consultants have also reported that we're looking at cash shortfalls here into the future as well. And even with more pension holidays, and even with more gimmicks and borrowing and budget reductions, that still isn't necessarily going to be enough to get at the heart of the issue and the core kind of structural budget problem that the school system.
Right. I mean, it's unsustainable as it is. But that having been said, you know, you look at the issue of, you know, and Governor Rauner did acknowledge during the campaign that he thought that there should be a new state aid formula for public schools across the state of Illinois. But that having been said, and while his plan is for a commission, I think that would, I believe, take 2 years maybe to try to, that would be the deadline.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's just such an extremely complicated system. And part of it is it's all kind of based on this fundamental core that we have in the state of Illinois of property taxes being the primary source of funding for public schools in Illinois. And I've talked about this before, and everybody hates property taxes. But, you know, we're looking inevitably at property tax increases here in Chicago, not just for the public schools, but also for the city. I mean, you may not hear that straight out of Mayor Emanuel's mouth, but there's seems to be little alternative, given kind of the time frames that we're looking at. But you know, basically, we fund schools in Illinois based on zip codes. And even though the Illinois Constitution says that the state shall be the primary source of funding public education in Illinois, our Illinois Supreme Court decades ago ruled that that was a goal and not a guarantee.
Exactly.
And so, you know, when you have these various complications going here, I almost wonder if this isn't a "be careful what you wish for" type of system in the end, if Chicago goes for the deal that Rauner was talking about. And again, this deal encompasses much more than just money. It also involves pension changes, it involves union changes, all kinds of very complicated things.
you know, there's a point, you know, the fact that this, let me put it this way. And this is how we put it in a recent story of ours. You know, if the city kind of emphasizes the bleak details of the school district's finances, that can kind of help strengthen its argument that the school system needs, you know, additional funding, you know, and argue that it can't give teachers the kind of raises that they've had in the past. And you obviously see the city doing that now at the bargaining table. I don't know, Rick. I mean, it's just like, what's the cliche about chickens coming home to roost or something like that? After
you can only kick the can so far down the road. Juan Perez Jr., my great colleague at the Chicago Tribune, thanks very much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin. I'm sorry there isn't happier news to talk about, right?
Well, at least the weather's nice outside, so I hope everybody gets out to enjoy it.
Very good. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. You can also reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, all one word, or at symbol Sunday Spin on the Twitter. So, as Dave mentioned during the newscast, the Stanley Cup will be on the WGN radio float at the Pride Parade today. My buddy Jeff Hoover out at WGN-TV noted that, not to be outdone, WGN-TV's float will feature Bozo hoisting Tom Skilling. So there you go. Everybody, it'll be quite the time out at the Pride Parade today. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Suzanne Strasburger. And Suzanne is the policy chair and co-founder of Illinois Partners for Human Services, Illinois Partners for short, which I believe is over 900 different organizations now it's the umbrella coalition representing human service organizations that provide services such as child care, elder care, youth programs, addiction treatment, homeless support, disability care. The list could probably fill the next hour, I'm sure. But I wanted to have Suzanne on because we obviously been talking for a couple of weeks now about the budget stalemate in Springfield, the battle between a new Republican governor and his agenda versus the Democrats who control the General Assembly, the fact that we have just had vetoed a state budget, except for the part that funds education. But we have no state budget in place. Wednesday is the start of the new state budget year. The state can't spend any new obligations. There is no authority to spend any money. And Suzanne, this has to be a time of, as we just talked about, Chicago Public Schools and their financial turmoil. Especially when you're talking about some of these nonprofit social service agencies that are, you know, living virtually on the edge anyway because of the state's problems in adequately funding and adequate timing of paying for services. This has to be a time of tremendous turmoil.
Thank you, Rick, for having me on the show. And yes, it is. So I want to also explain that my volunteer activity is with Illinois Partners for Human Service. We began about 8 years ago as a way to provide a common voice across all the sectors in human services. I work for JUF, Jewish Federation, right. And we are a major provider of human services from, well, it's unfashionable to say cradle to grave, but that's actually accurate, for all sorts of folks. So, and so we are seeing what's happening. So let me set some context on
sure.
Illinois and human services. Illinois, before this governor, going back many years, is a particularly low spender of money on community-based services. And by what that is in general, kind of the lower-cost services that are provided to people who are living and still supported in families. We rank, for example, among services to people with developmental disabilities, 44th of 50 states. So before this crisis began, we were in trouble. And we're now looking at, and this is in spite of very compelling data, both from families and from any kind of sort of economic analysis that it's better to provide services to people in the community-based settings. So
I mean, it's easy access. It's
just more efficient. For example, at CJE Senior Life, which is one of the partner agencies of the Jewish Federation, we provide community care services to keep older adults safe in their homes. And that is about, I don't know, at most it would be $800 a month. Equivalent Medicaid nursing home care is about $4,200 a month. So you get the comparison. I mean, is that by providing services in the community, you can often prevent this sort of later, more expensive institutionalization.
And get more value for your dollar.
Certainly most people would agree that they want to stay in their homes, that if they have children with developmental disabilities, they want them living safely in the community where they can visit them. People with mental illness would agree that they want to be off the streets and not in psych units, but rather getting the kind of medications that they need that community mental health agencies provide.
Well, indeed, on the state level, they were actually kind of doing away from the institutionalization model towards – I mean, that was kind of the goal.
Correct.
With the
there
state.
Was a number of court decisions that said that – people, we need to be moving. Illinois needs to be closing its institutions and moving people out into the community settings. What the impact of shutting down the community agencies will be, I don't know. But what I want to talk a little bit about what it means to be a community human service provider and what many of you in the audience who have children that are going to child care, who have elderly parents that are in adult daycare, who have, you know, who really depend in small or big ways on government-funded services. I want you to know what's going to be happening and facing people as of July 1st. So to begin with, there's tremendous uncertainty. This week, Thursday and Friday, and there'll be some coming up on Monday, providers got contracts. But here's the problem. If the contract was in a line item that was not included in the governor's budget, but might have been included in the Democrats' budget that was passed and sent to the governor, they did not get a contract for that. So they, in essence, are going to have to shut down that program or reach out and find its own sources of money. Easter Seals Central Illinois had to tell its people early on, families, about a couple weeks ago, that 1,600 families were no longer going to receive the kind of early intervention services that those families, those young children need. And what we know about early intervention is the brain is particularly plastic, sort of between ages 3 to 5. And so if you get them services, people who are born with some problems with learning to speak or other kinds of disabilities, if you get them early intervention services early, they can arrive at kindergarten and not need any special education the rest of their lives. So not getting the services for 2 years is really going to have some long-term impact on our costs as a state.
And again, right, it's the early intervention versus the long-term costs. And you know, school districts already struggling, and then you throw in the costs of special education needs and the value again.
Right. So it's, you know, a stitch in time saves nine is so totally true. So in some cases, so what you have is this category of folks that didn't even receive contracts and their boards are struggling. But then the second category you have.
Well, we need to take a break before we go on. But because I want to ask you about, you know, some of these practical effects as the state moves forward. We're speaking with Suzanne Strasburger, Policy Chair, Co-Founder, Illinois Partners for Human Services. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. 8:18 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin. And I'm joined here in studio by Suzanne Strasburger, Policy Chair, Co-Founder, Illinois Partners for Human Services, a coalition of more than 900 various groups, agencies, social service providers. And we're talking about the stalemate in Springfield, the ongoing stalemate. As you may recall, May 31st was supposed to be the end of the state legislative session, and of course that didn't happen. And now we're rapidly approaching Wednesday, the start of a state budget year. Late last week, Governor Rauner vetoed the bulk of the state budget. And Suzanne, I want to ask you about that, because one thing he did do the day before vetoing the bulk of the budget was he did sign one portion of it. And that was a portion that involved funding for public schools, K through 12. And in doing so, one, he took away a pressure point because people were looking at August 10th, the date of that first state school aid payment, as a date that if schools statewide couldn't open or would have to delay opening because of uncertainty over state funding, that might be something that generates, you know, public at large attitude here. Well, that pressure point's gone. But in signing that, the education portion of the budget, the governor said he was not going to be held hostage or have the school kids being held hostage by House Speaker Michael Madigan. Now, I'm not asking you to take sides in this, but so the school kids aren't being held hostage. Let's take that for example. What about everybody else that relies on these state services? They're being held hostage when there's no budget. I mean, you've got parents working poor that need access to daycare services for their children, child care services, at-risk kids, after-school programs. You have the health issues, mental health programs, programs for the developmentally disabled. Aren't they just being held hostage or being pawns as part of this larger political game?
So human services are actually sort of the human shield that people put out there on both sides as the consequences of not having a budget. But let me explain a couple of things. One is there is a great deal of uncertainty, even as today is, as to whether people are going to be funded by the state come July 1st. Those who have been said, have received contracts that said that they're going to get funded, there are no necessarily any amounts as to how much they're going to get funded or what the rates are going to be. They may give them a rate, and in the contract it says we can change the rate. So you have human service agencies. Most of the people drawn to human service agencies are mission-driven. This is why they do this. And they take a lot of pride in cutting corners, in pushing people to the utmost, staff to the utmost to provide the services. So they're going to struggle to keep the doors open come Wednesday. And what you'll see over the next 3 months is you'll see a lot of agencies that do not have lines of credit, easy lines of credit in the bank, probably getting a lot of pushback from their boards of directors to shut down the program. It'll be kind of like this, you know, winnowing out. You won't be able to – you're going to be looking, if you have an aunt that needs a Medicaid-funded nursing home, will be really tough to find it. It will gradually happen as opposed to be
right.
going off.
It's not like a switch gets turned on Wednesday, but it will for some of these providers.
For any number, I mean, at the Federation, we do refugee mental health services. That will no longer be there. So refugees, we're expecting a number of people coming in from Syria, from Sudan. They have very much trauma in their lives. They'll no longer be able to get the kind of help that they need.
Now, one thing, and I talked to new comptroller Leslie Munger about this, and you know, Illinois has this historic backlog of paying its providers of services, its vendors and providers of services, and I think the backlog still remains over $6 billion. But part of what I had thought might be the case was, even though we won't have a new state budget, that services provided in this current budget year that's ending, those bills can still be paid. But what the comptroller told me was that for a number of these smaller social services providers that are really living hand-to-mouth on state funding, very dependent on state funding, they've been getting expedited payments despite the backlog, so that
if 30 days.
Yeah, I was just going to say so they're looking at major issues in just a matter of days.
Exactly. They have 30 days, and many of them have to give people notice. So even if they get the contracts, and this is important, even if they are going to, it looks as though they can continue providing the services, they will run out of access to money in 30 days.
And they're the ones that are least likely to be able to access any kind of line
Absolutely.
Of credit.
Absolutely. They're small enough. They don't have sort of the support that others have.
And in fact, the state has actually, because of the backlog, is really relying on the providers as a borrowing tool for the state for cash flow purposes.
Well, I think people are always surprised at how much the providers will keep open, how long they'll keep their doors open just out of a sense of mission. But this is – I mean, I think the second problem that's about to hit is they're changing some of the requirements about who you provide services to so that there's going to be it's going to be harder to be eligible for services. So in different areas –
And that appeared to be coming anyway.
That appears to be coming anyways. It still needs to be clarified because a number of it has to get federal approval.
Right.
But I just want to make one comment is that, I mean, budgets are a reflection of people's priorities. And in 2011, human service agencies, as you'll remember, we had a budget crisis then, really went to the mat to in very many ways, support the calls for new revenues. And everyone said, this is great. And yet we still got cut. I mean, somehow at the end of it, human services, people do not realize that community-based human services is a way of saving the state money rather than losing it and is what people want.
Is that because it's kind of the way it's always been done kind of thing? That it's as far as the state and the kind of the mentality of those that are running the state?
For a long time, it was felt like it was just sort of charity and it was like a nice thing to do as opposed to essential.
As an obligation.
Then a number of court cases came into being, and so it became very clear that government had to be actively involved in funding this. And at that point, they went out to all the providers and said, please grow your programs.
Grow your programs, but you won't necessarily get the money that goes along with it.
In the beginning, in the 90s, they didn't. And I will expect that after a lot of programs shut down, we'll return to that. They're going to have to, again, reach out. But if you think about it, it's not a politically organized group particularly. We try as Illinois Partners, and then we hear people saying, but we're going to do everything to keep our doors open. We don't want to lay our staff out. So we get called wimps by legislators, and so at this point it's probably about organizing the families to speak up.
What people are asking me, well, you know, and the people throw around state shutdown, you know, as July 1 state shutdown. Well, I mean, the state doesn't actually shut down. In the way people might think it does. But people are always asking me, well, how does the public know? You know, what most people, their interaction with state government, on the surface, is driver's license renewals and things. And you can even do that by computer now. So it's not even clear if that's going to be impacted in any way if there's no funding. But what would get the public attention. Yeah.
So a couple of things on that. I mean, the Ask Me contract, I believe they got to agreement. And so.
Well, they have there's a one month
extension.
Semi-extension.
So people who are worried about their driver's license, that they'll be okay on that. One of the things that there was a number of programs were eliminated, and people, it's when the children showed up the next day and they couldn't get in, and people could start hearing about it. I don't think anyone's really aware of how your neighbor is using this program or so forth. So I think that's one of the ways people start to do it. Of course, we'll hit some neighborhoods much more seriously than others.
Suzanne Strasburger, Policy Chair, Co-Founder of Illinois Partners for Human Services. Thanks for getting up with me this morning on the Sunday Spin. We'll be back with more right after this. Coming up next on the Sunday Spin, Dale Ryder, Republican State Senator from Mattoon.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, 8:36 on this beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. A couple of notes. Yes, we have posted on the Sunday Spin Facebook page the blue cheese bacon coleslaw recipe. So you can find that. And I'll tell you something else that goes with it really great is my buddy of mine, Charlie, he works for Michigan Made Products. And he gave me a jar of pickled asparagus. but it's pickled. The brine has jalapeno in it. And it's this stuff is like candy. I mean, it's fantastic stuff. And he says it's making its way to the stores, so hopefully you can grab some of that. It's fantastic. I also wanted to note that I mentioned Comptroller Leslie Munger and discussions about the state's bills and that kind of thing. And her predecessor, the late Judy Bar Topinka, her son is has asked Riverside Township officials to consider the idea of naming the township hall in honor of his mother, who was a longtime resident of Riverside, former state representative, state senator, state treasurer, state comptroller, one-time Republican nominee for governor. And Joe Topinka suggested that idea. And, you know, if you've got any feelings on this, I mean, let's face it, Judy was a trailblazer, and you know, let the folks in Riverside know what you think. At times of this and crises in state budgeting, it is unfortunate that there's no longer a Judy Bar Topinka to turn to. Joining me now on the phone is Republican State Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon, and I wanted to invite the senator on the program because, you know, so often we talk about Chicago issues and Chicago public schools, those kinds of things. And I wanted to kind of get a downstate perspective of the stalemate in Springfield and what the perceptions are downstate. Senator, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Hey, Rick, it's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm wondering here, you know, the legislature is scheduled to convene again on Tuesday. And I have to tell you, I see no real sense for any optimism of anything happening to move forward with a budget or anything else before Wednesday, start of the budget year.
I would share your lack of enthusiasm in that regard, Rick. I just don't think that the parties either side have been properly motivated, although we are days from the start of the new fiscal year, to actually sit down and have conversations with one another. So I'm not sure. You know, we've been back to the Senate anyway, has been back for the last few Tuesdays, but it's been for dog and pony shows, if you will. I think it's an effort to make us look like we're working when we're really not working.
It's optics.
And it's not very good optics at that.
But, having watched some of those committee of the holes, I'd have to agree. And indeed,
yes.
On Tuesday, the Senate President John Cullerton has scheduled a committee of the whole, I believe, on workers' compensation reform.
Right. And you know, they'll have their witnesses, and they'll testify, and there'll be a smattering of questions asked. But we know that Illinois' workers' compensation system needs to be reformed, Rick. The question is, are we going to have the willpower to do it? So, but I just think, again, this is more running out the clock and to put us in an even more dire situation once the new fiscal year starts.
I don't know that you have any better crystal ball than I do, but I don't know how long this will go.
Rick, I don't either. I tell you, there was a time in my career when I thought that my political crystal ball was really good. I've since thrown it in the trash. But I think that this stalemate could go on for some time. I mean, you look at the kind of the two sides that are lining up against each other. You see the governor and Republicans. The governor ran last year and was elected with about 53% of the vote statewide in my area of the state. That number is much higher. And he ran on a number of platform items. But the overarching theme was this state's badly broken, and the people who have been leading this state for the last, you know, decade plus aren't getting the job done, and it's time for something different. And he's determined. You know, in my conversations with him one-on-one, when I've seen him in meetings, that wasn't some kind of stick just to get elected. This is what he believes. And so he's very determined. And then on the other side, you have the Democrats led by Speaker Madigan, who's really not been held accountable for what's gone on in this state for years. And I think believes that until he's forced to do otherwise, he's going to continue to do business as he's been doing business. So, and I don't think that, I don't think anyone giving in until they feel like they have to give in. And I think that could take a while.
Well, and when I was down for what was supposed to have been the end of session at the end of May, I kind of got the feeling, and I still think this feeling exists, each side thinks it has the public on its side. And I'm not sure that the public really has any side right now, except they just want to see things fixed.
Rick, I agree with that for the most part. I think both sides think the other side is going to lose in an overtime game and a shutdown or partial shutdown of state government. I would agree with that. I mean, I don't know why either side would be willing to go into this. But for that attitude, I think that the governor, and I think the governor's right, I think that he looks at the election in November. He looks at the way things have gone so far this spring and now into the early summer, and believes with raising the level of attention to what's been happening in Springfield for years. And yes, I'm talking about the speaker and his leadership, that in the end, the same people who came to the polls in November and voted for him are going to vote again or speak out again on the same issue with the same opinion. That is, Springfield is broken. It needs to be fixed. There's some fundamental reforms that need to be put in place before we just say, hey, you know what, we're going to do what we've always done, which is spend more money than we really have. And now, does that play out over just July? Does it take August? Do we get into September? I would tend to believe that late summer, maybe early fall, is the more likely scenario.
Well, and when I was talking to Suzanne Strasburger prior to you joining the show and about, you know, the various social service programs and providers that are affected by the lack of a state budget, and how, you know, public attitude, we're starting to move into the 4th of July and summertime, and I don't know that public attitude gets moved during that time, because for the average citizen of the state, their contact with state government is somewhat minimal. Now, that having said that, you know, when you look at the Chicago area, I mean, all due respect, you're like a rock star downstate. I mean, a state representative, they're a much more visible symbol of government downstate than, you know, in Chicago, you know, where it's alderman takes priority. It's a demotion to go to Springfield, you know, that kind of thing. But is there maybe a more heightened awareness that would exist downstate among the public at large than perhaps, you know, in the Chicago area?
Oh, I think so. I mean, and for years of my time in Springfield, I've had conversations with my friends and colleagues from both sides of the aisle for the northern part of the state. And that was one of the things when I first came to Springfield, Rick, that I was amazed at how different these districts are. And you're right. I think that in my district, I think because of, but quite frankly, the more sparse population, they're not flooded perhaps with the same amount of information they get about what's happening in the city of Chicago or in Cook County. And so there probably is a little bit higher level of attention paid to what's coming out of Springfield, which from where I'm at right now is just an hour and a half away.
Right.
That's the trade-off for me having to drive 2.5 hours to get to the other end of my district, whereas some of my colleagues in the north drive 30 minutes to get to theirs. But I think that's absolutely true. And that's part of the reason why I think it's going to take such a long time for this to play out, because once you get into September, then you start talking about petitions being filed, who's going to run for the Senate seats that are open, who is going to run for the House, and there may have to be political pressure applied in order to move some parties. We'd love to have a world in which it was just about the policy, but in the end, I mean, on election day is when many of these decisions are made, and so you may see a political angle to this as well, certainly.
We're speaking with State Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. We're speaking with Dale Ryder, Republican State Senator from Mattoon, and I appreciate the fact of having him on the show as we try take a downstate perspective of the Springfield stalemate. Senator, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick and your guests. I wanted to ask your guests about when we had the temporary tax increase. I think I heard that it generated $3 billion. Did that do anything as far as reducing the deficit? And now, and if so, in hindsight, maybe, look, I don't want to pay any more additional taxes either, but Rick had a guest on talking about services that people require that comes from these. So maybe in hindsight, or is there still a possibility that that's on the table? And one last thing, Rick, early happy birthday. I know you said you're celebrating on the 3rd. I'm celebrating on the 2nd, so enjoy your birthday and out.
Thank you much, Ron, and a happy birthday to you. Senator Ryder, I mean, we used the temporary income tax increase. Basically, I think that helped cover the pension costs. Wasn't that pretty much the case?
Well, that's a big part of it. I mean, also to catch up on bills with regards to Medicaid. Yeah, I mean, the temporary tax was mostly used to make up for past sins of using one-time revenue sources to prop up permanent increases in spending. And that's why you really didn't see any kind of real effect with regards to the deficit. I mean, we're going to go into 2016 fiscal year on July 1 with a projected $6 billion deficit. So that's why most people look at it and say, well, where did all that money go? It's because it was making up for things that were done wrong in the past. Looking ahead, what are the possibilities? I think everything's on the table, Rick, about what can be a solution for the 2016 budget year. But this is and this is really the crux of the issue, is that, you know, Governor Rauner came in as a bold reformer. I mean, that's the way he ran his campaign. And I think that there have been some, particularly Speaker Madigan, who keeps repeating in the press that he's about moderation and the governor's about extremism. I mean, to the point where I saw a video where he was actually getting a chuckle in the blue room at the State House where the press conference was being held because he just kept repeating the same thing.
I actually said that one way out of our fiscal mess is if we tax the words extreme and moderation.
I'm sure that got a laugh, too. That's good. But the simple fact is, I mean, if Illinois isn't an extreme state, and I think Michael Madigan would agree with that, then how did Bruce Rauner get 53% by being extreme? He's not. The governor believes in balanced budgets. The Democrats sent him a budget that is a deficit budget by $4 billion. The governor thinks that we should have common sense reforms like redistricting and like workers' compensation reform. Those are common sense issues. Those aren't extreme issues. So I think the governor is ready to be flexible. He said this during the campaign. He has said this all spring session on the issues of how much we spend and where we get the money we spend. But there has to be a meeting at the halfway point with regards to some of these reforms. And I think until the Speaker gives his Democrats in the General Assembly the okay to get serious about some of those things, this is going to continue.
I want to ask you about a parochial issue here, and that's the issue about the Chicago Public Schools. And, of course, we saw what happened in the House last Tuesday, a bill that apparently had looked like it was fast-tracked, went crashing down, and granted, the bill puts off again, but puts off by only 40 days the $634 million pension payment that the public schools are supposed to make, and they don't have the money to make. Do you have, if this bill gets called again and it gets to the Senate, do you have a position on it?
Well, I have not solidified a position right now, Rick. It's been frustrating, as I'm sure you can appreciate, not just for Republicans, but I think some Democrats and many, many in the state of Illinois, to watch, and the phrase has been used over and over again.
Don't say kick the can down the road, or I will tax that.
I'm not even going to say that. You're right. Just give the stiff arm to problems, hoping that they'll go away. And And that it doesn't work that way. The fiscal realities are what the fiscal realities are. As the old Midas commercial said, you can pay me now or pay me later. The difference is the bill later is going to be more. And that's the situation, as I understand it, with regards to the Chicago public schools. Rather than continuing to delay, how about a fix? About a serious conversation about a fix that I'm sure would be very painful in some quarters, but it has to happen, and it's certainly better than this. But I think that that's an example. That bill going down in the House right there, Rick, is another example of the fact that despite that we are on the edge of the start of the new fiscal year and facing a considerable shutdown of state government, Mike Madigan is not interested in moving yet. I mean, everyone in Springfield knows that if Mike Madigan wanted that bill to pass, it would have passed. But the speaker didn't want it because it hasn't risen. These issues haven't risen to a crisis level yet. And that's unfortunate because that just forestalls a real conversation and a real solution.
And also, you know, that's another reflection of where we are with state government, that it looks like we're almost Washington instead of Springfield. Used to be the place where it seemed like calmer heads prevail. State Senator Dale Ryder, Republican from Mattoon, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it.
Rick, it was a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Juan Perez Jr., the Tribune's Chicago Public Schools writer, Dale Ryder, Republican State Senator from Mattoon, and Suzanne Strasburger, Policy Chair and co-founder of Illinois Partners for Human Services.